From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome to Cairo Nights. Thank you guys so much for listening. All right, we have a really fun show because I have been out, as you guys might have noticed. We've been doing some best ofs. We have so much stuff that I have been doing on some of the other shows. I've been co-hosting with Sherry in the afternoons. I've been co-hosting with Spike from noon to three. It's been very, very busy. But we've done all this really great stuff. We've had all these great stories. And I thought it would be fun if tonight we could look back on some of those conversations I've been having with Sherry, with Jack, with just everyone around the station here, and play some of those for you here tonight. So without further ado, let's get into it. Enjoy.
USC is facing a bit of a dilemma. The valedictorian of the school always has some kind of speech in graduation.
Yeah.
So they are not allowing that this year because the valedictorian herself has been found to write some pretty inflammatory things on her social media accounts. It's all pro-Palestinian. She talks about Zionism is a racist settler colonial ideology that advocates for a Jewish ethnostate built on Palestinian land. Now, USC says they are doing this because they want to give way to safety. And I think what they're doing is, I think this is not only about safety, it's about money.
You think they're doing this just because it'll be bad PR if they have somebody with these opinions speaking in front of the students?
When you look at what happened at Harvard and you look at how that blew up and it became a very, very big deal and so many donors just pulled out because they said, why would you allow that at a school? Why would you allow people to protest and say, you know, these horrible things and these anti-Semitic things? And I think USC believes, and I'm sure they're right, that she's going to be inflammatory when she makes her speech. Obviously, this is a big part of her life. This is what she believes in fully. So why wouldn't she?
I mean, you know, they said this the story looked into her, you know, like you were saying, looked into some of the stuff she's posted on social media. I would say that if I was, you know, on the USC, you know, chancellor with whatever the board who decides these things, these would make me very nervous if she plans on saying these things to a giant crowd. I mean, how many people do they say they expect at a graduation like this? 65,000 guests. I would imagine a great deal of them would be pretty offended. She would talk, you know, if what she talks about in her social media posts, according to this this outlet, they said the slideshow on her social media post calls for a one-state solution that would, quote, mean Palestinian liberation and the complete abolishment of the state of Israel. Other students at the school say that the content has anti-Semitic bigotry. It would be very difficult for them to say, hey, let's give you, how long is a valedictorian speech even? Like 20 minutes? We're going to get up there and you can speak?
I hope not. Because graduation.
I didn't give the valedictorian speech. So I don't know how long they are.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'd say that's, you know, maybe not quite that long, but long enough to incite people, long enough to make people uncomfortable. I just think this is going to backfire. I think what's going to happen.
I think it's already backfiring. It's all over. Yeah. You know, news stories are covering it. We're covering it. I mean, it's everywhere. And, you know, I agree with you. I think it's going to be a big deal.
I mean, if you think they're protests now, wait until, I mean, they are saying that people that are on her side, if, so to speak, they're saying that, you know, you're getting, this is too political or too one-sided and that you are denying her free speech rights. I'm sure it was a difficult decision for USC because they realized they can't make everybody happy here. But I honestly think it is somewhat about safety, only to the degree that, you know, they don't want people getting up or, you know, causing a ruckus during the celebration or during the graduation.
Well, also back to your point originally about the money. I mean, these schools thrive, especially a school like USC. I mean, it's so expensive. They thrive on big donors. This is what they want. I mean, this is who they're fishing for. They're fishing for billionaires who attended the school, who want their kids to attend the school, to keep pumping money into their system. And I'm trying to remember the name of the guy, but after that whole Harvard debacle and after, you know, the different schools. Remember the different chancellors of the schools were speaking in front of the Senate?
Yeah, Cornell. Yeah.
Cornell.
Was it Cornell?
Was it Penn also?
I think at University of Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Yeah. They all and then you had these big money billionaire Wall Street guys who were like, well, all right, fine. I'm not giving any more money to this school. And they were very public about it. I mean, guys who would give $50 million a year, you know, $500 million to the school over the last 10 years. They were just saying, "Nope, well, I'm gonna close down the checkbook. I can give that money somewhere else." Bill mm-hmm. something. Was it Bill Ackerman? Is that the guy's name?
Yeah, he withdrew his money from Harvard, and a lot of people were reporting on the fact that the enrollment at Harvard went down. As far as how many kids are applying for that, I don't really think that's probably terribly significant, because even with that backlash and whatever, to go to Harvard,
yeah, you're still
pretty big deal.
Yeah, and they're still turning away many students to Harvard. You're still not getting into Harvard, even though, you know, it's not like they're suddenly like, oh, please come to Harvard. So yeah, I agree with you there. But I think there'll probably be some backlash to this. But I also understand the school's desire to try to not be notable, make it a notable event. I don't remember what the valedictorian at my school said. It was pretty boring. I don't remember who the speaker at my school was.
I don't either.
Sometimes they have celebrity speakers who like pop in. Ironically, we have a Goldie Hawn story later. Goldie Hawn was the guest speaker at my wife's college on her graduation day.
Oh,
that's all
okay.
She remembers about that graduation day. It's like, oh, Goldie Hawn was at my school.
That's cool, though.
Yeah, it is cool. You know, it was in L.A., but like, you know, so I don't think Goldie Hawn had to travel far for the speech. But I do think that schools are probably like, listen, seeing what happens at Harvard, seeing what happens at Yale, at Penn, we don't want this type of publicity. We would rather just have a nice graduation and move along. So maybe they're willing to weather the storm. I can't imagine that they decided to cancel this speech, that they didn't think that this was going to happen.
It's going to happen, and you can only imagine what's going to happen that day, because there will be people that will probably try to block entrances and do all of that in support of this young lady. In other news that has to do with kind of speech stuff, I think you've got a
I think we have some audio on this one. So
this
kind of all ties into the First Amendment free speech stuff. There was a city council meeting that was happening in Bakersfield. And in Bakersfield, you had a woman stand up in front of a... Have you ever been to a city council meeting, Sherry, by the way?
Oh, God, no.
No. Yeah, no, neither have
Please.
I. Any normal person... Here's why you don't go to a city council meeting, because it's the most boring, useless thing that you can possibly do with your time. Nothing's getting accomplished there. People are just getting up so they can stand in front of the mic. Thank you, Andrew. So you can get up in front of the mic. Like, they have to, it's obligatory for the city council members. They don't want to be there. People like you and I don't want to be at a city council meeting. So all you get is the nuts. You just get crazy people who want to show up and scream. And that's probably what the worst part of a city council job is you have to sit there and you have to let the public come in and scream at you.
But that's the only entertaining part, too.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Certainly,
that's the only fun part of it. It's later to be able to listen to these crazies.
Now you're actually making a good case for a city council meeting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in Bakersfield, you have this city council meeting happening, and you have this this woman stand up, and she gets in front of the microphone, and she just starts going off on the city council members. And what her goal is she would like the city to sign pass a resolution in the city of Bakersfield, California. And I don't know how this would affect the people in Gaza, but she would like the city of Bakersfield to sign a resolution for a ceasefire in Gaza. I wasn't aware that Bakersfield had that power, but apparently this young woman thought that they did. So she gets up and she just lets them have it. Is this first clip here, Jacob? Is this her yelling at them?
That's right.
Okay. So she's using her First Amendment rights. She's talking as much as she wants. She gets her, I don't know, what is this, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever. We're not going to play 5 minutes, but you get a certain amount of time. You can kind of say whatever you want to these city council members. And she says some pretty inflammatory things.
I remind you that these holidays that we practice, that other people in the Global South practice, believe in violent revolution against their oppressors. And I hope one day somebody brings the guillotine and kills all of you. Regardless of whether you elect people,
it's not a good start. Like, if you're going to start,
if you save the guillotine, like, make that like paragraph four I wouldn't put it in paragraph one.
You're totally right. Like, you need to build up to that.
Yeah.
That makes a big impression.
Yeah.
I think you're totally right. Your delivery on this would be much better. But let's hear what she has to say.
People in the office, they'll backstab you. They'll let you die. And for that reason, you guys want to criminalize us with metal detectors. We'll see you at your house. We'll murder you.
Ms. Patel, that was a threat. What you said at the end. And so the officers are going to escort you out and take care of that.
Okay, so you can hear she's obviously very animated. She mm-hmm. is there speaking. Obviously, she starts losing the message, I think, and she then starts literally just making death threats, which you cannot do to public officials, to elected officials. And so then this happens.
We learned today Patel has been fired from her job with the Center on Race, Poverty, and the Environment. The organization released a statement saying it unequivocally condemns any threats of violence or unethical behavior. Patel's facing 18 felonies. She has pleaded not guilty.
So she's going away, she's going to be locked up. She, you know, we'll obviously see what happens when the case goes through, but she was held on, I think she was held on $2 million. It's a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're treating this as a big deal. And I think they're trying to, it sounds to me, I don't know if this is the case, but it sounds to me like they're saying, hey, you know what? Like, let's kind of make an example that people should not be making death threats to public officials. There's a big part of me that I was happy with this outcome. I'm all for free speech, but if you start making death threats in person at any time, but if you start making death threats to these public officials, like, what else does she expect to happen?
Well, also the irony of the fact that she's advocating for people to no longer be killed, and then she threatens to murder somebody.
Yes. Yeah, great point.
I'm sure she will do some kind of prison time for all of that. And I think it is setting an example that you can go too far on these things. You can have an opinion. You can exercise your right to free speech. But when you get to the point of threatening somebody, it has to be addressed.
Yeah.
You have to do it. Yuri Berliner, I hope I'm saying his name right. Yuri Berliner. He is the reporter from NPR. He's the senior business editor that exposed NPR as having a very liberal bent. He went on to talk about how after the George Floyd incident in 2020, that everybody was really all about making things more of an advocacy, or making NPR more of an advocacy platform than a news platform. So they have suspended him, but for 5 days. Now, I'm not surprised at this. And although I'm really happy that he came out with the information that he did, and it sort of verifies what we've all known, I understand why they had to suspend him. And I don't think that it was yes, it was about what he said.
Yeah.
But when you work for a company and you're a broadcaster, you are that company. You represent them in everything that you say. And if you embarrass a company, embarrass an organization, go on to be, an unofficial spokesperson for them, that is probably a violation of a contract that he signed.
Let me read you just a little piece. He wrote this column in Bar. I think you guys talk about her sometimes on the show, right? Isn't it Barry Weiss?
Yeah.
Oh, Barry Weiss.
Barry Weiss, I'm sorry. She has a site called The Free Press. So he published this on her site, and the title of it is, I've been at NPR for 25 years, hear how we lost America's trust. And then he said this is just a little clip from it. He says, it's true NPR has always had a liberal bent, but most of my tenure here, an open-minded, curious culture prevailed. We were nerdy, but not knee-jerk activist or scolding. In recent years, however, that has changed. An open-minded spirit no longer exists within NPR. And now, predictably, we don't have an audience that reflects America. That wouldn't be a problem for an openly polemical news outlet serving a niche audience. But for NPR, which purports to consider all things, it's devastating both for its journalism and its business model. So I think what he is saying there, I agree with you that, you know, that's a pretty outright condemnation of his bosses, mm-hmm. of the people that he works for. And he is confirming, I think, what a lot of us generally in the public would assume about NPR, which is that, sure. You know, they are more left-leaning, and that's kind of the way that they see the world. And you, so are you saying that you think that it's justified that they suspended him for 5 days?
Well, what complicates this is that they're government funded.
Yes.
So if it were a private business and they wanted to be as left leaning, if they're MSNBC,
yeah,
have at it.
Or that's, like as right leaning as Fox News is. That's yes. their
That's their brand. Yes. That's what they do. But the fact that it is funded by taxpayers who fall to the right, to the left, and in the middle. This is quite an indictment of and verification of the fact that they actively work to represent fewer people. And so I understand why they had to make a stand on this and say, you know, you have to be suspended for 5 days without pay, because that is what a broadcast entity would probably do if someone came out and anybody really, it really wouldn't have to be broadcast. But if you go to a newspaper or to a someplace and say bad things, there will be consequences for that because you've embarrassed them.
But Sherry, don't you think that it's bad PR for them?
I mean, absolutely.
Because specifically what he's saying like, yeah. I have been there for 25 years. He's got the most NPR name out there, Yuri Berliner. And he's saying like, I have been a member of this organization. And now even I'm telling you, a left person thinks that this place has got, you know, they've lost it a little bit. They've gone so far left that we're not even telling it accurately anymore. And then their response, instead of just ignoring him or saying like, hey, Yuri, we really don't appreciate that, which they probably did behind closed doors anyway, but to publicly suspend him or to put him on the sidelines or whatever, would seem to kind of confirm everything that he's saying.
Yes. And it's kind of a dumb move on their part.
Yes.
But as many people that are saying, thank goodness somebody has finally pulled back the curtain on NPR, there are NPR advocates that say, how dare he? He's probably some right-winged whatever. He doesn't need to go out around saying it. And the other person that's under fire is this Catherine Mayer. She's the new CEO.
Yes.
And when they've looked at her social media posts, she has a lot of things that...
Oh, boy.
That,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she downplayed the rioting during the social justice things. She said... And I think he points to that, too, saying, this is our leader. This is someone who clearly is very much on the left side of things. And she drives the bus.
I guess the lesson is, when you write bad articles about your boss, it may come back to bite you.
Wow,
and don't,
I never
and don't do
that.
It. Just don't do it.
I'm ripping something up right now. Okay.
Breaking news.
Yeah, right. Good plan. Okay, we'd love to hear from you. Muckleshoot Resort text line is 1-888-973-5476.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. All right, tonight we're doing something a little bit different. I've been filling in on some of the other shows. So we're going to actually be looking back at some of those other shows. I've been filling in with Sherry on the John Curry and Sherry Ehrlicher show. I've been filling in with Spike on the Jack and Spike show from noon to 3. So we're going to take some of those segments and we're going to replay them. Some of our favorite segments from these different shows, we're going to replay them for you here tonight. So without further ado, enjoy.
This is kind of a new... I guess is it a new partnership? Have I missed something? Sean Lennon and James McCartney, the son of the famous Beatles duo.
Yes.
I know they both are individually, they are singers, but is this the first time they've collaborated?
I think this is a new partnership. James McCartney is obviously Paul McCartney's son. He has written with his father. They wrote a song recently together called Beautiful. But this is his own thing now. And so, people are kind of excited, obviously, when your fathers are two of arguably the, you know, most famous musicians of the last 1,000 years. People get pretty excited about that. So they have released a song, James McCartney and Sean Ono Lennon. I will say, we have the audio and we can play the song. And it's a very, very... Have you heard the title of the song yet?
Yes, it's called Primrose Hill.
Primrose Hill, which seems to me to be a very, very Beatlesque.
Yes, it does. It's very British, very something like that.
Yeah. Like, obviously, they're going for that Beatles vibe. So I'm going to play the song. I would be interested. Do you think that they're attempting to sound like the Beatles here? Or is it just naturally happens because these guys are the sons of the most famous Beatles, who is the most famous band probably of all time? So listen to these guys. This is called Primrose Hill, James McCartney, Sean Ono Lennon.
Laid on Primrose Hill. Didn't know it still. You meant what you said. didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to say.
I enjoyed watching Jake enjoy that song.
Do you guys think? Do you like it? I mean, are you enjoying it?
It's pleasant.
I think it's good. Yeah.
Andrew's shaking his head. No. Andrew doesn't like
Andrew.
It.
Andrew.
Nah, I'm not What's a big up? Beatles guy.
Well, this isn't the Beatles.
But are you a big Sean James guy?
Nah, not really.
I think, like, if I didn't know that this was the Beatles'
progeny,
I would say it's pretty decent. I mean, it's better than I could do. I'm not a musician. I don't know anything about
word judging.
Well, that's not saying a whole lot, but it also has a very Oasis feel.
It does have an Oasis feel. You're right.
Which
modeled their music after the Beatles. So
that's right.
Full circle.
And they were supposed to be the next Beatles, but they were. But then they imploded because they were crazy and all that. But yeah, I like it a lot. I think it's really good. The harmonies are nice. And I'm sure they were trying to maybe not replicate entirely, but yeah, they know that being the sons of the Beatles makes people pay attention, but
yes,
they're going to have to deliver something that is reminiscent of that in order for people to really, take it.
And they know what an impossible task that is. Like, there's nothing that they could have come up with that anybody would actually genuinely go, oh my gosh, this is amazing, because it's not this. Hey, you know what I mean? Like,
right,
all these Beatles songs are just so amazing. They're so great. And they weren't being judged against anybody. I mean, they had competitors at the time, other musicians. But it would be really, really tough to be judged against your two dads, who are the most famous pop musicians of all time.
When I did music radio, we used to interview, all kinds of people that would come through town. And one of them was Jacob Dylan. It was
Bob Dylan's kid.
Son. Yeah. And
who looks exactly like him.
Yeah. And we were told, if you mention Bob Dylan, he will get up and leave.
Really?
Yeah. The Wallflowers, that was his band. And he was kind of like his dad, like scowly and but yeah, I mean, and I know he didn't want those comparisons. So it was, but you can't help but make it when you got an icon for a parent.
Yeah, it's not fair. It's not fair to everyone else.
It's obviously going to be what people think of and look to as a comparison, whether we want to or not. I think it's great. I think they did a really good job. I hope they continue. And they even have a music video contest
James and Sean.
Yeah.
And what do you win if you win this music video contest?
I didn't look.
I presume they release your video as the, don't know.
Oh, like you get the video that the company's...
You're the definitive video.
Primrose Hill.
Oh,
that's nice.
I've made that up, but I can't imagine that's the case.
None of us apparently have the research. I think the important thing is we played the song. We've covered that now. Anybody listening, they know that Paul McCartney and John Lennon, they have kids who have gone on to become musicians. I think it's an impossible thing. I'm surprised that both of them went into music, to be honest.
Well, that's what I was going to... Did you ever consider going into... I don't know what your dad does for a living, but did you ever consider
Did I ever
trade?
Consider going into risk management?
That's radio.
I did it one time.
You managed some risk.
I said, but he's so well known as like the best in the world that I couldn't possibly... live
They'll look at my risk management and they'll be like, that looks a lot like
it's never going to be Greg's risk management. It's
never going to be that.
Just don't even try.
Big shoes. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So I decided not to.
Probably a good move, because if you fall short, you'll embarrass everybody.
I didn't want to embarrass everyone. Yeah.
That's why I went into radio.
That's why I went to radio.
There's nothing.
You cannot embarrass yourself in radio.
Not even a little bit.
Actually, the more you embarrass yourself, the better. Yeah.
Oh, Courtney Love, we can't get to her, but she has an opinion on just about everybody. Courtney Love, whose new name is who? I'm not sure why she thinks she's better than some of these major stars like Taylor Swift and Beyonce. But
she's got some opinions. She's got some harsh opinions.
She's just, I mean, does anybody take Courtney Love seriously? Does anybody care what her opinion is?
I think a few might.
What'd you say?
I hope they do.
Her new name is Foo? Is that what you said? What?
I said her name is Who? Oh. Because nobody talks about her anymore.
Okay. Burn.
I mean, when's the last time you heard about Courtney Love? Other than if, you know, she's sliding down a staircase somewhere and, you know, doing all kinds of weird, crazy things at a party.
I don't think we have a Courtney Love fan here. I think that's what we're learning.
Let me get this straight. You're not a fan of Courtney Love?
Are you not a fan of her 90s band, Hole?
Hole? No. No. Are you? I kind of like music. So, no, I'm not a fan of Hole.
Wow. Yikes. Yikes. Harsh words.
Where's the hot take button, Andrew?
Yeah.
Well, we have a story about her next, right? Like, I hope people have some opinion of her.
Yes.
She gets into it. She has some opinion of some ladies
She's
out there.
Not afraid to speak her mind.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. All right, tonight we're doing something a little bit different. I've been filling in on some of the other shows. So we're going to actually be looking back at some of those other shows. I've been filling in with Sherry on the John Curry and Sherry Ehrlicher show. I've been filling in with Spike on the Jack and Spike show from noon to 3. So we're going to take some of those segments and we're going to replay them. Some of our favorite segments from these different shows. We're going to replay them for you here tonight. So without further ado, enjoy.
Jake Skorheim is in, and we were just having a little music discussion, and people were writing in about it. Let me see, who is this from? Oh, this is from Rachel C. She says, I'm a B fan forever, and no, it sounds like them, but the music is not great. We're talking about the new song from Sean Lennon and James McCartney, and it sounds a little bit like the Beatles, but people are kind of on the fence about it. This one person says in 402, I think it sounds a bit like Elliot Smith crossed with the Beatles.
I don't know who Elliot Smith is.
I don't either.
Is Elliot Smith? Jacob, do you know who Elliot Smith is?
The name sounds familiar, but I don't know his music well.
Andrew, you're even
Elliot
younger.
Smith?
Do you know who Elliot Smith is?
Elliot Smith?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, somebody thinks it sounds like that.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that they're digging in deep on this
breaking
one.
News.
If you'd like to send us a comment, we would love to hear from you. Go to the Muckleshoot Resort text line 1-888.
More comments we won't understand.
5476. Yes, make another obscure musical reference that we all talk about on the air that we don't know anything about.
Somebody got upset at me real quick. I got to say, yesterday we were talking about a singer that there was a show here locally that some StubHub sold some tickets to an artist. And they weren't actually real tickets, and they were a scam. And the artist's name was Lofoy? Lofoy?
I don't know. Loifa.
Loifa. Wasn't it Loifa?
Loifa. Yeah, it was Loifa.
Yeah.
And I said it sounded like Nelly Furtado. And that's really the only musical reference that I could pull out of my head at the time. I have no clue what Nelly Furtado sounds like. I think that maybe there's some vague similarity. The text line did not agree with me. It's apparently she sounds nothing like Nelly Furtado. And I feel like I did want to address that to apologize. Thank you.
Okay. So you just pulled any singer you could think of at the time who it sounded like.
This sounds also like music. Yeah.
What's that? Well, no, I know what Taylor Swift sounds like. She doesn't sound like Taylor Swift. But Nelly Furtado sounded like, oh, okay, well, she's a little bit more of a, I was thinking kind of like an independent label, you know, like maybe somebody.
That doesn't have anything to do with how they sound.
Well, Taylor Swift's like a massive pop star, and Lofa. I didn't, you know, I had just heard her for the first time.
Loifa.
I'm sorry, Loifa.
All right.
But I thought, oh, I remember kind of vaguely a Nelly Furtado sound, and so you know, I don't know music super.
You mean Nelly Furtada?
Nelly Furtada and Lofa, yeah.
And Lufa.
Lufa and Furtada. There's a band.
We really should move on. People are just getting angrier about us.
I'm sorry, guys.
I'm glad we can make it better. Courtney Love says about Taylor Swift that she's okay right now. I guess she thinks that she's very popular and all of that. She'll give her that. But she's just not interesting.
Yeah, she says she's not important. Taylor's not important. She said she might be a safe space for girls, and she's probably Madonna of now, but she's not interesting as an artist.
Really, Courtney? Really? I mean, she's a billionaire. She's she may be the best-selling artist of all time. and she was Times Person of the Year.
Yeah, but is that but is it interesting?
Right.
Just having such phenomenal success. Is that interesting?
Yes. I'm sorry, Courtney. She doesn't wear red lipstick. She does wear red lipstick and have a cigarette hanging out of her mouth. I'm sorry if that's...
No, she doesn't smoke. Yeah.
No, she doesn't. Madonna, I don't like her and she doesn't like me, says Courtney.
She also says that Beyonce's new album, she says, I like that she did it, but she doesn't think... She's not a fan of her music. But she likes that she got into the country space. But she says she's just not a fan of Beyonce's music.
I think the country song's really good.
Have you
heard it?
I actually haven't heard it yet.
Okay, Jake.
I don't listen to... established, I don't listen to a lot of music.
Okay, all right. Here's a really good barometer.
Yeah.
Of whether or not you're living in a cave.
Okay.
If I know about it and you don't, bad news. Because I don't know anything about music. I have terrible tastes in music. I've talked about this before. I like Hanson. Okay, so
Mbop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I know about something or whatever and you need to catch up with that. It's a great song.
It's a good song. You've heard it? Let me ask you one question.
I like it.
Does it sound anything like Nelly Furtado?
Yeah.
It sounds a little bit like Lufa, but not the Furtada.
Okay. Well, then I don't know if I'd like it. I don't know. I'll check it out. Thank you.
Okay. This is important right now. Here is the Muckle Shoot Resort text line. 1-888-973-5476.